Hello there, my brother, and welcome to Inspired by Impact. I'm your host and real-world personal trainer, Carl Berryman, and this is the podcast for men who want to train for life by taking what works inside the gym and applying it outside the gym to ultimately ignite the impact you wish to see in your world. Now, here's just a taste of what we be training today. This is something that I can pepper throughout all five of these don'ts and do's, but I really want to emphasize right now. When somebody is going through a very shitty time in their life, they're doubting themselves, they feel hopeless, they feel like shit about themselves, they have no fucking idea how they're gonna get through the darkness that they're going through, and you immediately try to solve that problem for them, try to get them to feel better and see things a different way, what you are actually doing without knowing it is unjustifying the way that they feel and making them wrong for the way that they feel. That's what happens when somebody is trying to make me feel better when I am in the midst of my darkness and expressing the shitty things that are going on for me. What they're telling me is, Carl, you have no right to feel the way that you feel, and you need to feel something else. And that only makes matters a million times fucking worse. Hello there again, my brother. And welcome to episode 118 of Inspired by Impact. It's been a bit since I've been on the mic, and it feels nice to be back. It feels nice to be back, even though I don't feel nice in general. But today, if you suffer from depression, what do you wish people would stop doing that you just don't have the heart to tell them, but wish somebody would? Now, for those of us who have a very intimate and long-term relationship with depression, it can be really hard to communicate with others about what's going on for you, what you need, and what pisses you off. Now, I've been in an almost constant state of depression for about the past month now. And while I know my loved ones only want to help, there are certain things I wish they would either do or stop doing because they don't fucking help and usually only trigger me to feel worse. But like I said, it can be hard to tell the people you love to fuck off politely, so let me do that for you. Now today, I'm hoping to accomplish three things. Number one, if you suffer from depression, you'll probably be able to relate to some of the things I'm experiencing. And it's always nice to know that you're not alone. Number two, if you have difficulty communicating with the people you love about how they can support you, this might help. And number three, if you're someone who wants to know how you can better support your loved ones who suffer from depression, it's better you hear this from me than from them, because I am an impartial third party, and I'm going to speak to what the person you love who suffers from depression may be going through, but these are all assumptions, so you definitely want to make sure that you guys are both on the same page. Now, warning, today might get a little dark, so if you're a sunshine and rainbows type of person, you're especially going to want to stick around so you can hear about how the other half lives. Now, disclaimer, as always, I am not a medical professional or psychologist, so everything I share is from my personal experience, so be sure to seek professional support to ensure you get the help that you need. But without further ado, let's dive into today's episode. So today we're diving into the top five depression do's and don'ts. And while there could be a much longer list, these are things that have popped up for me over the past month. And the past month for me, to give you some context, I usually reference the absolute turning point and low point of my life being the end of 2020, beginning of 2021. And this has easily surpassed that given some external factors in my life. While there were some external factors in my life back at that previous rock bottom, this new one has definitely gotten into an all-time lower, given what's going on with JL and her ongoing battle and struggle with topical steroid withdrawal, something I don't wish on any fucking human being at all. And then just my own lack of purpose, lack of hope, severe depression that's going on. So we're at a new rock bottom, and after an amazing conversation with Susie Bennett yesterday, Susie is not only what a lot of us would deem the Wilt Chamberlain, not Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan actually gives a lot of credit to the people that came before him for his success. And we dubbed Susie the Michael Jordan when it comes to male suicide, in terms of the amount of knowledge she has and the number of conversations and the number of individuals she has connected with regards to male suicide. But she is not only that, she is a dear friend and somebody who I had a absolutely beautiful conversation with yesterday, somebody who can relate to us, who those of us who suffer from depression, in a very deep and intimate way. And as a result of that conversation, I made a promise to Susie that I would hop on the mic before I was out of my depression so that I could speak from the bottom of the pit. Although I wouldn't say I'm at the absolute bottom today, just the fact that I'm on the mic suggests that I've taken a couple steps up or a couple pulls on the rope to get myself out of the absolute bottom. But I do want to have a voice that is a little bit more raw and not looking back in retrospect, because I know that had I not shared what was going on for me while it was going on the podcast, I would be missing out on an incredible opportunity to speak from a raw place. As much as I don't fucking want to, there's a huge part of me that doesn't want to share this because I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me. As you're going to find out, that's one of the top five depression do's and don'ts. I don't want sympathy. I don't want anything like that. The most important thing that I do want to accomplish that I mentioned before is that I just want to make sure that those of you who suffer from depression know that you're not alone, because I know when I hear about other people's struggles being similar to mine, it helps ease the pain a little bit and it helps lift the weight off, because I don't feel like I'm the only fucking asshole who thinks and feels and acts the way that I do. So that being said, what are the top five do's and don'ts when they come to depression? Well, number one on my list, and I would put this at the top of the list, although these can fluctuate: don't feed me sunshine and rainbows bullshit. Just fucking don't. Okay, so here's what I mean. A part of me feels really bad because a really good brother of mine, Jeff Zakarski, who's been on the podcast a couple times as well, he sent me a message on Monday via text. And it said, "How are you winning so far this week, my brother?" And just at the time, like, I wasn't winning fucking anything. Like, a win for me was getting off the couch. It was getting off the couch. And so in my mind, as soon as I read it, I'm just like, fuck, just stop with this fucking positive thinking bullshit right now. I don't want to fucking hear it. I don't want to hear it. Okay? I just want to feel like shit right now. I'm totally okay feeling like shit. In fact, it makes me feel better when I feel like shit. Like, if you've ever seen the movie The Big Short, and what the hell? Mark is his name, the actor, or not. That's the character's name. Who the hell plays him? Steve Carell. And he walks into his investment firm, and he's talking about how his wife thinks that he should quit his job because he's miserable. And the guys say, "But you're happy when you're unhappy." And he says, "Yes, you're right. I am happy when I'm unhappy." And as weird as this might sound, there are times when I feel like, so many times throughout the last month, when I feel like shit, I don't want to hear about things that are going to make me feel better. I don't want to read things that are going to make me feel better. I don't even want to do things that are going to make me feel better. For example, I know that going for walks makes me feel better. I get in a better headspace. I don't want to fucking do it. I know go sitting and having a cigar helps me feel better and helps me get in a different headspace. I don't fucking want it. I want to sit on the couch and I want to binge 12, 14, 16 hours on Netflix and feel like shit. That's what I fucking want. Don't try to convince me otherwise. Okay? So the other thing with don't feed me sunshine and rainbows bullshit. One of the things that, there's a few different facets here, but Susie shared a story yesterday. And it was interesting. somebody that she cares about. She was saying how this person wasn't in at some point in time, or maybe for a long, I think it was for a long period of time, wasn't in the best state of mind. And what Susie would do is just deliver compliments and try and do everything she could to help them see themselves in a better light. That sounds like a good thing to do. However, if you come to me when I am in my absolute darkness, and Susie made such a good fucking analogy yesterday. She said it's like staring into the sun. Like it hurts your eyes and you can't do it for too long. That's what it's like when I am in my pit. I'm going to speak on my behalf right now. If you resonate with this yourself, great. Or if you're listening to this on behalf of understanding somebody who suffers from depression, you're going to want to check in with them to see if this resonates with them first. I'm not speaking for everybody. But when somebody tries to pump my tires, when somebody's like, oh, Carl, but you've got this, you've got this. Oh, Carl, you're so good at this. But Carl, I remember how it's just fuck off. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it because I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Like when some of my closest brothers have said, Carl, like your podcast is very impactful and people really like to listen to it. And I love the stuff that you say. I'm just like, I don't believe it right now. I don't believe anything good about myself. So just fuck off because it's only making me feel worse. So there's that. And then the last part of this don't feed me sunshine and rainbows bullshit is don't try to tell me all the things that are good about me. Okay, just don't. I don't want to fucking hear it because I don't believe it right now. You can tell me how wise I am, how articulate I am, how good my messages are, how good I am at making analogies to the... I don't want to fucking hear it because I don't believe it. And if you keep spewing shit at me in the hopes, I get it. Your intentions are sound. That needs to be, I should have prefaced with that. I know your intentions are sound. And anybody trying to help you out of your pits, it's because they love you. It's not because they're purposely trying to make you feel worse. But when you try to pump my tires, it fucking makes me feel worse because I don't believe it. And it reinforces this ideal of the person that I'm supposed to live up to being, but I cannot fucking get myself to be there right now. So, that being said, if I don't want you to feed me sunshine and rainbows bullshit, what do I want? Well, I do want you to express understanding and compassion. Now, this is going to be very individualized, very individualized. So how does this happen? This is a very subtle art and skill that needs to be practiced. A lot of times it can be just a matter of saying, man, I get it. I get it. That's it. Maybe telling a story of how you've related to that. But the other thing, this one's tricky. Because if you go into a story about how you can relate to it and accidentally start making it all about you, that really discounts what the person's going through, in this case, me. It's like, oh man, I remember this time. And then you go off on a tangent for 5 minutes talking about how fucking bad your life is. Like, I don't know. For me personally, that's not what I want some of the times, most of the times. It's enough to say, dude, like, fuck, yeah, that sounds fucking horrible. And that's it. Like, what you're going through right now sounds fucking horrible. Because what you're doing there is you are justifying the person's feelings. Now, this is something that I can pepper throughout all five of these don'ts and do's, but I really want to emphasize right now. When somebody is going through a very shitty time in their life, they're doubting themselves. They feel hopeless. They feel like shit about themselves. They have no fucking idea how they're going to get through the darkness that they're going through. And you immediately try to solve that problem for them, try to get them to feel better and see things a different way. What you are actually doing without knowing it is unjustifying the way that they feel and making them wrong for the way that they feel. That's what happens when somebody is trying to make me feel better when I am in the midst of my darkness and expressing the shitty things that are going on for me. What they're telling me is, Carl, you have no right to feel the way that you feel and you need to feel something else. And that only makes matters a million times fucking worse. So to recap the first one again, don't feed me sunshine and rainbows bullshit. Do express understanding and compassion. Which bleeds very nicely into the second don't and do. Don't rush the funeral. Now, here's what I mean by that. I am going to read you something that Susie sent to me yesterday that was so fucking profound and beautiful right after our conversation. So I mentioned that Susie had some really good analogies yesterday. And one of the analogies that made a lot of sense to me was she talked about this idea of depression being a spiritual funeral. And when I thought about that, because I had previously talked to her about how I'm not rushing this process. Like I know better by now. When I've been in states like this, I haven't been in this dark a state for this long a period of time before ever in my life, including when my dad passed away in his sleep and including 2020, 2021. Never been this long or this dark. But I've been in several mini pits, if you will, and I don't rush the process because I know something is coming from it. I know there's something that I need to learn. So I don't want to just, it's no different than going to the gym. And like one of my biggest pet peeves is, and you've heard me say this a million one times before if you've heard it on the podcast, but people who just fucking totally half rep their shit. Mind you, asterisk, long range partials, those are awesome. But if you're doing pushups and you're counting them and you're going halfway down and just pounding out as many as you fucking can and you're half repping for the sake of getting to a number, like you're not doing yourself any fucking good. You're cheating the shit out of it. So for me, I know that I'm cheating the shit out of myself if I try to get myself out of my pit too fast before I learn the profound lesson that needs to be learned. In other words, what Susie said is there's a death and a rebirth that is happening during this process. And she said, you would never rush a funeral. And that's exactly what's helping me get through this right now. And this perspective made a lot of sense of why I don't want to rush this. Because old Carl is dying. I knew that coming in. As soon as I started to feel this darkness in a new way, I was like, holy shit, something big is about to happen. I don't know what it is. But without fail, every single time I've been in a pit like this, or even remotely like this, I've learned that I need to be patient to see what is coming from this. And there's a part of me that's dying right now. So imagine going to a funeral and then let's say it's a widow. Let's say it was my mom, right? When my dad passed away in his sleep, you go up to my mom and you say, okay, let's, the funeral's over. Like during the funeral, as soon as the casket goes in the ground or whatever, did we do that? You know what? Fuck, I don't even remember. I remember there's a lot of things I don't remember about when my dad passed away because I've completely blocked them out. But let's say goes into the ground and then my mom's just like, okay, I was just going to stop and edit that out, but I'm not going to because I'm all over the map today and that's okay. So let's say we're at the funeral, casket goes in the ground. And then immediately after it's like, you go up to my mom. It's like, okay, we go for some beers or let's go for some drinks or just completely do something that's totally inappropriate. Going out for beers and drinks may be what somebody would want. Nothing wrong with that. At the same time, to be totally coy and pretend like something profound didn't just happen, like she didn't just bury the man she was married to for 29 fucking years and had 4 kids with, that'd be ridiculous. And let's say that a week down the road, she starts crying and you're just like, you know what? You should be over this by now. Like it's been a week. It's like, who the fuck are you to say how long it should take somebody to get over their suffering from a funeral? So if somebody is going through a depressive period and they interpret it as them, a part of them dying, essentially, so that another part can be reborn, which is something Susie mentioned. Who are we to decide how quickly somebody should get over that? So you don't want to rush the funeral. But anyways, getting back to what Susie said to me, this is her whole message, which is beautiful. She says, quote, Carl, thank you. It was beautiful for me to speak with you tonight. I always find our conversations renewing and they connect me back to my inspiration. I'm sending you an enormous amount of love. This is the part that I want you to hear. I am honored to have been a guest at your spiritual funeral. Thank you.
I honor the death that is happening and honor the birth that is emerging. And I'm sending you huge, or I'm sending huge love to you and Jenny Lee for coping through this period." End quote. When Susie said those words, "I am honored to have been a guest at your spiritual funeral, and I honor the death that is happening and honor the birth that is emerging." To be honored in your suffering, to honor your own suffering, to me is what will bring true light and wisdom into the suffering. To honor it, not to shit all over it. In other words, to develop a better relationship with suffering. So, if the don't was don't rush the funeral, what's the do? The do is allow things to happen at their or my own pace. Okay? So if somebody, like I've already mentioned, I won't beat this one like a dead horse here. By the way, I should have apologized in advance for the number of F-bombs, but that's just how it's going to go. Where was I? Oh yeah, talking about allowing things to happen at their own pace. This is super tricky though. I've noticed for me, and Susie asked me this question yesterday. She's like, "How do you know when it's time to stop?" I'm putting words in her mouth here. But stop the pity party and start doing the shit that you know you need to do. So say, for example, I've had a target for this the past few weeks to get to the gym once a week. That's it. Because that's what I can bear right now. Thinking about going more than once a week, it's too fucking much right now. And I don't want that pressure. I don't want it. I'm okay with not going to the gym 5-6 times a week. Same thing with tracking my macros. I'm not really very focused on that shit at all. I'm tracking them, but I'm not hitting any targets. And I'm cool with that. So allowing things to happen at their own pace. When do you step in for yourself to make the changes that you need to make to get yourself out of your pit? And nor anybody else can give you that answer. They can't. That is something that you have to intuitively decide on your own. That's the part that sucks. For me, I'll question myself. So if I'm feeling anxiety about doing things that I know will help me feel better, I'll just question it. It's like, okay, do I really need to do this right now? Is it going to make a difference? Am I hurting myself dramatically by not doing it? That's pretty much the biggest question I'll ask myself. Because if I'm sitting on the couch watching 12, 14, literally 16 hours of Netflix, am I hurting myself? I'm not helping myself, but I'm not doing any damage. Like, one of the really weird things now I think about it, side note, is I haven't had any suicidal thoughts over this period of time. And I definitely attribute that to me just really accepting where I am. And thanks to, I can't remember her last name, Tara, who wrote the book Radical Acceptance, because I'm reading that right now. And a lot of things in there, I'm just fucking peppering the shit out of marking that book up right now, because there's a lot of good ones in there. So Radical Acceptance, I definitely recommend. I'll put that in the show notes. But yeah, Tara Brock's book is amazing. I just looked up her last name. Anyways, so making sure that you're allowing things to go at their own pace, because this is one of the things I learned from one of my good brothers, Jay Stamatelis. We don't know how long these feelings are supposed to be here. We don't know. I don't know. Like, when this depression showed up, I didn't say, "Oh, okay, well, he's here until January 17th. Okay, cool. We'll keep him company until then." I had no idea it was going to go on this long, but I'm just allowing it to be. And that's working for me right now. All right. So don't rush the funeral. Do allow things to happen at their own pace. Number three. Oh, this one. This is a gooder, and it relates back to number one for sure. And number two, actually, because they're all kind of intertwined. Don't lift the weight for me. Don't lift the weight for me. Okay, so I'm going to give you a beautiful fucking analogy that you may have heard me say before. This goes back, man, probably about it wasn't a year. Back to in the summer, when right after my my elbow, because I fucked up my elbow hardcore in the summer and couldn't do much lifting. And then when I finally, when it healed and I was finally able to get back into lifting, I was really working on getting back up to two plates on the bench. And so I remember I was stuck at 185 for a while in terms of getting that up for 5-6 reps. And then finally I got over that plateau. So I was going to the 200, 205, 210. And I remember one time when I was trying 205 for the first time, I got my buddy DJ to come spot me. And I didn't tell him how I wanted to spot, but man, he gave me the perfect fucking spot. And this is what it looks like to me. He asked me if I wanted a lift. Okay. So I told him, no, I don't want to be surprised by the weight. I like lifting the bar off by myself, unless it's something that's really hard to move and I'm doing a one rep max, but I'm just going for 5 or 6 reps. So I said no. So he's like, okay. So as soon as I lifted the weight off the bar, he had both of his hands about an inch away from the bar during every single rep. Every single rep, he was coming down with it. He was going up for it. So by him just having his hands there, that took so much pressure off of me, because just instantly and intuitively, I know I'm safe. Like I can go for as many reps as I can here, because DJ is right there. He is ready to go. It's not like he's going to have to be surprised and come and grab the fucking weight if it's about to fall. He's right there. But I think I did, if I remember correctly, I think I did 5 reps. So the fourth one was very questionable. So it comes down to my chest. I'm going to push it up. It's slowing down, slowing down, slowing down. And then I got past the sticking point and I got it up. And I'm like, Kate, I'm going for one more. And he knew I was going for it. He'd probably make me go for one more anyways. So comes down, touch the chest, coming up, and it's stuck. Like it's sticking, but he's still not touching the bar. His hands are right there. I move it like a millimeter, then another millimeter, centimeter, then an inch, and then boom, past the sticking point. And I fucking got it up without him touching the bar. But he immediately, when I got to the top, he knew that was it, grabbed the bar and racked it for me. Okay. So it was a perfect fucking spot because he did not lift the weight for me. On the other side of that, the following week, DJ wasn't available to spot me. So I asked my buddy Ryan, hey, Ryan, can you give me a spot? And again, I didn't tell Ryan how I like a spot. So I told him, okay, I'm going for 4 to 6 reps. So I get on to rep number 4 and it's starting to get hard. Okay, it's starting to get hard. But I got it up with not too much of a hesitation. There was no stall. Like the weight didn't stop on the way up. Rep number 5, I go down. I come a couple of inches off my or above my chest after or on the concentric part, pushing the weight back up. And it sticks and I'm pushing through it. Ryan immediately grabs the bar and racks it. And I was like, in my head, I was like, oh, dude, like I fucking had that rep, man. And so I think I said that a little bit more politely out loud. He's like, oh man, I'm sorry. But the thing is, he didn't have his hands there the entire time. And as soon as he saw me struggling, he just assumed I needed the help and lifted the weight off for me. Now, comparing those two feelings at the end of a set. Now, when do our muscles grow the most? Obviously, when they're under the highest level of intensity, right? However you want to call that. So for me, that highest level of intensity is just before. Well, the second highest level of intensity is just before I don't have anything left in the tank. Highest level would be when you have nothing left in the tank. And that's when I would drop the weight on me, right? Hence why I get the spotters. But Ryan robbed me of that. He robbed me of the most critical growth part of the set. And this is exactly what we do when we try to take our partners, our friends, our brothers, our loved ones' pain away from them. As soon as don't get me wrong, again, this is just to me. If somebody likes to be spotted by you having your hands on the bar the entire time, then by all means, go ahead, but you're not doing the fucking work. Why lay down on the bench if you're just going to have somebody else fucking do the work for you? So when we're going through our depression, the last thing I want is for you to lift the weight for me because you are robbing me of everything. That being said, I'm going to play devil's advocate on this as well, though. There are some times where I just can't handle the weight. I just can't handle it. So I need somebody else to do it for me. I can't fucking handle it. But at those times, you know what? I'm not going to get somebody else to do it for me. I'm just not going to go to the gym. So outside, that means I'm not podcasting. Like I said, I'm not physically going to the gym. I'm not tracking my macros. I'm not checking in with my brothers the way or in the frequency that I used to. I'm just not fucking doing it. I'm injured. I'm emotionally injured. And just like if I'm physically injured, if my back is super fucked up, I'm not going to the gym to try to do shit that I could do, let alone trying to do things at the level I could do if I was 100% healthy. Emotionally, I'm a shit show. So my life is going to be a shit show right now, relatively speaking. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. So the do here is just do spot me as needed. So this is where this, you know what? I'm going to save this part for last, but I'm going to remind myself right now. And you've got to remind me when I get to the end too. Okay. To talk about the role of communication on behalf of the depressed. So if you are the person who's depressed, spoiler alert, this is what I'm going to talk about in detail at the end. It is your responsibility to communicate how you want to be spotted. But we'll get back to that later. So number four, don't try to lift the same weight. Oh man, this is something that I've gotten better at over the years, but it definitely took some practice. So I have a number of commitments that I track, both inside the gym and outside the gym. So for each area of the prep work, physical health and fitness, I don't know why I said that first, it's actually last. So purpose, health and fitness, relationship, health and fitness, emotional health and fitness, and physical health and fitness. I had three things that I had to get done on a weekly basis in each one of those. Not just once, say for example, inside of purpose, health and fitness, that was three podcasts per week. That was one of my big lifts for purpose, health and fitness. I had to do three podcasts for a week. And I was doing that for a while. When I'm depressed, just take a look at the dates. I haven't done a podcast for fucking 2 weeks. So let alone trying to do three in a week, like that's insane. So for me to try to keep on top of all of the things that I'm able to keep on top of when I'm running at peak form is ridiculous. So what I used to do is I would shit on myself for those things. I'd be like, oh, Carl, you just need to get into Atomic Habits again and figure out how to make this, how to crave this more, how to make it easier, how to adjust your system. No fucking system is going to work for me right now. The only system that works is to dial shit way down. Like I had a rule that I would apply with myself and my brothers. It's no more zeros, right? But during this time, guess what? There's going to be zeros. There is going to be fucking zeros. And I'm totally fine with that. I've accepted that there are going to be zeros. As much as I don't want them to be, as much as when I'm in the best possible state I can be and I'm producing like crazy and I think, oh yeah, I'll never have any more zeros. No, right now there's fucking zeros. There are zeros because I just can't lift the same amount of weight. It's no different than when, like I said, I messed up my elbow in the summer. For me to go into the gym, like I think I was, before I hurt my elbow, in terms of the goal of getting back to 225 on the bench, I think I was at about 210. So I was going to give myself probably two or three more weeks to get up to 225. Now, let's say I mess up my elbow, I go into the gym, and I try to get 210 out again, when I literally couldn't bend or straighten my arm either way. Like, it's pretty much, well, stuck in a locked position. That's ridiculous. Emotional injuries are no different. They are no different at all. When you are emotionally injured, there is no way you can lift the same amount of life weight that you could if you were perfectly healthy, emotionally healthy. It's ridiculous. So you need to take some weight off the bar. So it took me 3 weeks into this, what is going on now, 5 week depression, to take a look at the list that I have on my phone in an app called Done, where I had to just like, I went through all of my 12 habits. My 12 critical compounding commitments, I call them. My 12 big lifts, if you will. And I deleted a number of them. And I had to change some of them. Like, I just wasn't podcasting. I had no desire to podcast. I didn't know if I was ever going to do the podcast again. I didn't see any fucking point in doing the podcast. I wanted nothing to do with it. So I took it off the list. I took it off the list because I knew it just, it wasn't in the cards. What was in the cards that I replaced it with was research. I just wanted to research some stuff that I was interested in. And journaling. I wanted to journal about the stuff that I was interested in. That's it. Now, that is not going to move the needle very much at all. But now that I think about it, it isn't. It's not a zero, is it? So there were a lot of things on my list that I changed. I reduced a lot of things for sure. Like I mentioned earlier, the gym wasn't five times a week. It was once. And in terms of tracking my macros, I normally would give myself a tick in tracking my macros if I came within 100 of my macros while hitting my protein. So I had to hit my protein for the day, which is super easy. And I had to be within 100 calories of my overall caloric intake for the day. That's when I could give myself a check mark. If I was 102 or 101 over, or if I hit 98, I didn't get the check mark. Now it's just tracking calories 5 days a week. I don't care. There's some days where I have 1700, and yesterday, if I remember correctly, I probably had like 4300 because I got up at midnight and I was like, you know what, fuck it, I'm having some chocolate cake that was in the fridge, and I pounded like 850 calories worth of chocolate cake. It was delicious. I slept like shit afterwards, but I didn't care. So yeah, you can't expect yourself to lift the same weight. And this goes with your relationships too, like I mentioned as well. I am all about sending video messages to my brothers and connecting and being the one to instigate the conversations and instigate the connection. That has not been me over the past month at all. I've done it with a few people because they continue to check in with me and I want to show some mutual respect there. But there's a lot of people where I'm not checking in anymore. And if I do, it's usually instigated by them, and I'm not sending video messages. They're getting text. Not even voice. I'm not fucking up for it. I'm lowering the bar. So that being said, if you don't want to try to lift the same weight, you need to take some weight off the bar. That's it. Take some weight off the bar. What can you do to make your life more manageable? There are so, like, saying this right now, because clearly when I hop on the mic, I get into a better state and I'm in a more inspired state of being. But like on Tuesday, for example, I felt so bad for Jenny Lee because she needs me there so much right now. And I just couldn't. I stayed on the couch downstairs all by myself, knowing that she is suffering upstairs, knowing that there are things I can do to at least help her alleviate the excruciating pain she is dealing with 24/7. And I just couldn't fucking do it. I couldn't do it. My dogs, like thinking about taking them outside, just stirred up this disgusting feeling of anxiety in my stomach. Thinking about feeding them, thinking about feeding myself, thinking about doing the dishes and putting them in the fucking dishwasher. Like everything like that. Thinking about going and getting groceries, thinking about ordering groceries and so I don't have to go get them. It all produced anxiety. All of it. How can I expect myself to be on top of my game when I feel like that about the littlest things? I can't. So I took some weight off the bar. And it helped. All right. So number four again, don't try to lift the same weight. Do take some weight off the bar, which takes us to the last one, number five. This one I'm going to play both sides of the fences because this is a very... Oh man, this one's all over the map. Okay. So I'm labeling it, don't leave me alone. Okay. So don't leave me alone, which means there have been times in my life where depression has come into a point and I didn't have the relationship with it that I do now. And when I've had a worse relationship that I have with it now, suicidal thoughts have come in and a couple near suicide attempts happened. This time there hasn't been, knock on wood, there hasn't been any desire or even thoughts of suicide. And I don't want to say this is why there hasn't been. If I had to guess, it's because of the book Radical Acceptance and me just really diving into developing the skill of allowing this shit to be and making it okay and showing love and compassion towards the suffering that I'm going through. That's probably what I would attribute it most to. But getting back to the whole don't leave me alone thing, When I'm reading the book Radical Acceptance and I hear Tara talking about her experience with depression and everything that she went through, I can see myself and hear myself in her words. And that makes me feel better. A lot of times when we go back to the first one, expressing understanding and compassion, and that can come through relatability, like not taking over the story like I mentioned, but sharing how you've experienced the same thing, that can help somebody not feel alone. Just being in the same space. So this is the opposite of don't leave me alone. Do share space and time with me. Solution free space and time is how I'm going to word this one. Solution free. I don't want you to solve my problems like I mentioned, but Jenny Lee knows that if she's just there with me on the couch when I'm binging on Netflix, that her presence there makes a big difference. Even though I can't take her pain away when she's in bed and it's impossible to get comfortable, me just being there watching CSI on the laptop, it provides some comfort. My brothers who are reaching out to me and say, "Hey, Carl, just want to say hi. That's it. Like, not even saying, "Hey, how's it going?" Because the answer is most likely going to be it fucking sucks. Like, there's been no miracles in the last 12, 24 hours. My life still fucking sucks. But just saying, "Hey, Carl, I was thinking about you." That's sharing space and time. "Hey, man, if you're up for a call, let me know. If not, cool." That's sharing space and time. Just don't leave me alone. And here's how I'm going to play devil's advocate. There are times where I just want the world to fuck off. I don't care who you are. Jenny Lee as well. Like, just fuck off and leave me alone. As long as I'm not, and this is going to be really hard for you to gauge, and by you, I mean anybody close to me, or if you're listening to this and thinking about somebody in your world who suffers from depression, it's going to be really hard to gauge when things could be potentially dangerous for them. So you have to learn the cues. Speaking of which, that's a perfect transition in the part that I wanted to emphasize. But before I get into that, this last one, don't leave me alone. Do share space and time with me. So let's recap before I get into the last part. So the first don't was don't feed me sunshine and rainbows bullshit. Do express understanding and compassion. Number two was don't rush the funeral. So do allow things to happen at their own or my own pace. Number three was don't lift the weight for me. So do spot me as needed. Number four was don't try to lift the same weight, which means do take some weight off the bar. And the last one was don't leave me alone, do share time or space and time with me. So this whole idea of communicating while you are in your pits, while you are in the darkness. First of all, it's going to be really hard for you to communicate what you need when you're down in that pit. Because it's going to be really hard for you to find language that is coming from a loving place and is coming from a truthful place. So when those little bits of inspiration do come back, when those little pieces of light do shine through the cracks and you feel like there's something you can share to the people you love about how to manage your depression, how to support you, what to give you, what to not give you, when to do it and when not to do it, that's when you're going to want to do it. When you have those little bits of inspiration. If somebody asks you how they can support you and you don't have it in you, it's just a simple saying, "You know what? I have no fucking clue right now. So let me let you know when I know. So while everybody around us, they love us, right? And they only want the best for us, which is why they're bringing the sunshine and rainbows, which is why they're trying to rush the funeral, which is why they're trying to lift the weight for you, okay? Which is why they're trying to keep you at your best. They're only doing it because they're well-intended. However, they don't know that their intentions can sometimes be causing more harm than good. And it's up to us to communicate that. For those of you listening who are thinking about a partner that you can support who suffers from depression, while it is up to them to communicate that, it's really fucking hard. You're going to really have to pay attention to the cues. Verbal cues are not really going to do it all the time. Read their body language. If you try to do something that you think is going to help them feel better and it agitates them more, don't get mad at them because you're just trying to help them. Understand that, listen, even though you're well-intended, what you're doing isn't helping, so stop fucking doing it. Like, read the cues. This is going to be a constant dance between you and the person that you love on both ends. And who's leading the dance is going to change from time to time. Like, the person who's depressed, you're going to have to lead the person who's trying to support you. The person who's supporting the depressed, you're going to have to lead them sometimes because they're just fucking totally dancing with two left feet? Whatever, fuck, I don't know. I can dance, so I've never had that problem. Anyways, but that's what I want to get to, is the whole communication part. But most importantly, and this leads us into episode 119 of the podcast coming up. I don't know when it's going to be. Hopefully it's sooner than 2 weeks from now. But I am going to be talking about the relationship you have with yourself and your ability to communicate with yourself during your suffering, about your suffering, so that you can see suffering for what it is. Just like Susie said, it is a death and a rebirth. That is at least something that really helps me understand what I've gone through every time I've gone through something even remotely like this. There has always been a death and a rebirth. Always. But until I am able to improve my relationship with depression, improve my relationship with suffering, which can only be done by improving my communication with the two, I'm going to keep spinning my fucking tires and learning the same horrible lessons over and over again. Thank you very much if you made it to the end. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being willing to challenge your perspectives if you are somebody who suffers from depression. Thank you for being willing to challenge your perspectives if you're somebody who wants to support other people and may not understand what they're going through. Even if you don't fully understand it because you don't experience it yourself, it doesn't mean we can't show compassion. Compassion is always going to be one of the critical foundational components to understanding and getting through depression. Until next time, my brother, what are you training for?